This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Purdue University Northwest is offering through its faculty members an interesting series of lecture discussions, which are entitled Race, Racism, Anti-Racism. And in general, because of our issues here, not only in Northwest Indiana, but around the nation and the world, this is a very appropriate topic. Faculty members from the College of Humanities, Education, and Social Sciences are going to be involved in this. It's a way to learn more about activists who are basically risking their lives for the sake of social justice. And you'll be able to see it. It'll be available by Zoom or Facebook Live, as you choose to be able to join in. It's a free series of events. It's virtual, open to the public. And our guest today is going to be doing the one called Race and Wrongful Convictions. Professor Nikki Jackson, who is a professor of criminal justice, is going to be joining Roosevelt Glenn, who is an exoneree, on this topic. And by the way, the conversation is going to be in the Zoom on Tuesday, October 6th, as part of the series. And Dr. Jackson, thank you for joining us here today on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your interest, which is very deep, in the subject of wrongful conviction.
About 4.5 years ago, I read an article in the newspaper about a gentleman who had been wrongfully convicted for 24 years for crimes that he had not been committed. And I had to meet this gentleman, so I reached out to the reporter, and who then connected me to his attorney, and I met with Mr. Donald and sat down with him, I think a day or two after, and heard of what his journey has been like and how he lost 24 years of his life for crimes that he never committed. The guy had never even had a speeding ticket, to the best of my knowledge. So I had made some promises to Mr. Donald that I was going to be his voice and help make some change. And it was at that point that I started doing some research and recognizing that so many African-American males have been wrongfully convicted. And I also learned that most of our wrongful convictions in the state of Indiana had come from Lake County. And that was really bothersome as a professor at Purdue Northwest, which is housed in Lake County, and wanted to better understand what was taking place. So I started this journey, and it's a very long journey, but made some changes, and one of the changes that I wanted to see was a compensation bill for folks who had been wrongfully convicted in the state of Indiana. And thankfully, got some senators to listen and state reps, and we now have a bill in the state of Indiana which will offer compensation to exonerees. The bill is not perfect, and we're still in works with some modification requests, but we'll see how that goes. So that's really how I started this journey, and I've learned a great deal about wrongful convictions. I have spent the past 2 to 3 months now interviewing exonerees throughout the country. Mm-hmm. I've interviewed about 40 or 50 exonerees, male, female, Hispanic, African-American, white, and just learning more about their ordeals.
Have you found that being an advisory board member at both the Indiana State Prison in Michigan City and also at the Westville Correctional Center has not only helped keep you up to date with what is happening, but has helped offer the help that you may need in talking with people to get them to talk about what their issues are?
Well, it's interesting. As an advisory board member through the Indiana State Prison and Westville Correctional Center, I have other advisory board members that I have reached out to for guidance and assistance. Mm-hmm. And I've been very grateful that these folks have been able to answer my questions. In fact, I remember asking the former superintendent of Westville Correctional Center if he knew one of the exonerees, and he said he did not. And I said, well, he was, you know, under your charge. And he said, that's a good thing that I didn't know who he was. That means he was never in trouble. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting, comment. But I have, I have definitely taken my experience as an advisory board and really restructured my thoughts and my approach as an advisory board member at the prison than when I had started many years ago.
When you and Mr. Glenn come on for the conversation on October 6th, is there anything in particular, besides what you've kind of mentioned with us here as we talk, but that you'd like to bring forth to the people that are participants as well as those who are watching and listening at the time?
Mr. Glenn's ordeal is very important for folks to understand how race has played a major factor in those who've been wrongfully convicted. We know that minorities, particularly African Americans, are much more likely to be wrongfully convicted. I think about this. The National Registry of Exoneration shows that we have about 1,900 exonerees in this country. 47% are African American. And think about that, 47%, and 13% of our U.S. population are African Americans. So you can see how disproportionate these numbers are, right? These percentages are. We have way too many minorities sitting in prison, particularly African Americans, and we're finding that many of those who are incarcerated are there really unlawfully. They didn't commit crimes. I am on the board at the Caring Place, which is a domestic violence shelter in located in Valparaiso. And my background really has been domestic violence. And what I've found is that there is a very strong connection between domestic violence and wrongful convictions. So it's very interesting that my research has brought me to a different area of research, but they are both connected. I found that many of these folks who've been wrongfully convicted have been products of homes where domestic violence occurred. And for females who've been wrongfully convicted, the majority of them, actually everyone that I've interviewed thus far, have been they have been wrongfully convicted based on some type of an intimate crime, and later learned that no crime even existed. No crime even existed. And so these women have spent many, many years in prison for crimes that weren't even crimes. One of the things that Mr. Glenn and I are hoping, to convey to those who are attending is how being black had impacted Mr. Glenn and his experience with the criminal justice system. I want people to understand that African Americans are much more likely to be wrongfully convicted for crimes, particularly murder, sexual assault, and drug crimes. In fact, innocent black people are 7 times more likely to be convicted of murder than white people. So those are innocent black people. And there's a host of reasons for that. But one of the factors that plays a role in why innocent black people are convicted of murder more so than white people is due to unconscious bias and due to explicit racism. Crime that we see high rates of folks who are wrongfully convicted, particularly African Americans, is sexual assault. Blacks are 3.5 times more likely to be exonerated for sexual assault. And what leads to these African Americans who are innocent being wrongfully convicted in sexual assault cases is mistaken identification. Unfortunately, victims wrongly identify the perpetrator. And then the third type of crime where we see high rates of wrongful conviction by race is we see blacks are much more likely to be convicted. In fact, they're 12 times more likely to be wrongfully convicted for drug crimes. Yet blacks and whites, studies have shown that blacks and whites can use drugs at similar rates, but blacks are 5 times more likely to go to prison. And the reason we see more blacks going to prison for drug crimes than whites, even though they're committing them at the same rate, is that police are more likely to arrest African Americans than whites. Moreover, they're more likely to patrol areas where African Americans reside compared to whites. So we have to make some changes. There has to be some reform. And one of the things that Mr. Glenn and I will be talking about are some of the concerns that we have about the criminal justice system and its biases. We know that in Chicago, there was a commander, Detective Burge, John Burge, who in the early 90s, late 80s, I believe it was late 80s, mm-hmm. was torturing young African-American males into false confessions. He was forcing them to confess to crimes that they did not commit. And this was, you know, this was happening, and people were not speaking up. And I think it's time for change. It's time for change, and we need some reform. And we want to make sure that the right people are in prison for who've committed these crimes, and not the wrong people. And these African American males and females who have been wrongfully convicted have spent many, many decades in prison, while the real perpetrator has been out on the street. Mistaken identification is the leading factor in sexual assault cases among African American males. So we have victims who mistakenly identify the perpetrator, because, you know, based on dark skin, whatever type of hair, but they typically mistakenly identify African American males, and we found that's a huge problem. It's a huge problem among sexual assault victims. They are wrongly identifying their perpetrators, particularly in cases where the perpetrator has been African American.
Well, Dr. Jackson, thank you for what you tell us now, and we're looking forward to your presentation working alongside Roosevelt Glenn, the exoneree, on the topic that you're going to bring up with the conversation series October 6th, and it's entitled Race and Wrongful Convictions. I'm sure that it will fit in nicely with the rest of the series that you and your colleagues with Purdue University Northwest will be able to offer to anybody that views it on Zoom, and thank you for speaking with us today about it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Professor Nikki Jackson is a professor of criminal justice at Purdue University Northwest. She's been involved in the issues of wrongful convictions, and that is why she is going to be one of the participants in the series that you can see on Zoom, as well as join on Facebook Live. The other people that are going to be participating from Purdue University Northwest include Professor Lee Arts. He's a professor of communication. He'll be on November 3rd talking about media framing and the politics of racism, and then the series will wrap up on November 30th with Professor Kim Skypes, who's a professor of sociology, on how to talk about race in the 21st century. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. There is a new program that's available to see on YouTube and other sources as well coming out of the East Coast. It is called Internet Expert. It's put out by Boston-based GBH, and one of our own representatives here in Northwest Indiana has been a contestant on that program recently, State Representative Chris Chung, who's from Dyer, and he's, of course, made history in Indiana by being the very first Asian-American legislator in Indiana, and he got to square off with another young lawmaker in the program, which is entitled Internet Expert. The host of Internet Expert is a student journalist, we should say, Malik Mercier, and we have both Chris Chung and Malik with us today, and thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, and if you will, Malik, get us started. Tell us about the program, what Internet Expert is all about. What's the goal that you have set for it?
Yeah, so Internet Expert is a really exciting and engaging show for Gen Z. And so that's really the special thing about it, is that we're sort of catering to young people. And with this election year, we really wanted for young people to not only know how to vote and know how to sort of navigate all of the things that are sort of suppressing the vote and making it more difficult, adding more hoops, all of that. But we also wanted to inspire them to get more active in, you know, politics and in the whole democratic process, and just sort of understanding it more. And so that's sort of been the goal of the show, is to sort of make it creative and have all these games and have awesome people like Chris be able to come and show how they've taken that next level to actually, you know, run for office.
I understand that there are literally millions of young people who are voting for the very first time in this election coming up November 3rd.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, knowing that there are so many young people who are just getting that first vote out, and especially with something, especially happening, I think, in a time like this where there's a pandemic and there's just racial tension, there's so much happening. I think that it's been really fun to sort of see how people could get more informed from the show. And I think it'll make a difference in sort of having that impact of helping people navigate all of it, especially, like you said, when you're a first-time voter.
The program is available to see on YouTube. They have a YouTube channel set up for Internet Expert, and there are other sources, too, that you can also see the program. And let's talk now, Chris, if you will, start us off first about how you got invited to be a contestant on the Internet Expert program.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us, Chris. I was reached out to by WGBH. I think they were looking for a kind of a state versus local dichotomy between lawmakers and showcasing the fact that there are diverse legislative faces all across this great country. So I competed against City Councilor Rigel Robinson from Berkeley, California. So way on the West Coast in a completely different city. And I was representing the Heartland, and I was proud to be able to do it because, as Malik said, it's going to be such a hotly contested election. It's going to be a close one probably on the federal level and in my own district here in Northwest Indiana. So it's critical for us to just get out the information to as many voters as we can, even through creative mediums like this one.
Now, how did the first part of the episode get started? Malik, how did you get to introduce Chris and Rigel in the contestant stage?
Yeah, so for this episode, we sort of focused on having a local election challenge. So having these two young officials that were going to be able to sort of be juxtaposed against each other with, you know, sort of the state and local, as Representative Chiang said, but also just these two young people who were sort of taking action in their communities and sort of filling a void that wasn't there, right? So being able to, in Rigel Robinson's case, sort of speak for college students in a community that has so many of them where they weren't really feeling represented in politics. And then with Representative Chiang, sort of introducing how Asian Americans need to have more voice in his community. So sort of seeing how both of them were doing that and sort of taking that initiative. And so that's sort of how we posed it. And then we gave them a bunch of fun, exciting challenges to sort of face off.
Well, tell us about some of the challenges that the two contestants faced.
Yeah, so one of them was inbox democracy. And so we had them figure out how you contact your local elections office. So sort of helping people. And that's sort of the thing with the show in general, is we want other people to be able to sort of play along and figure out how they can answer these questions as well, because for everyone that answer is going to be different. And so going to your local elections office, knowing how to contact your officials is super important, because we want people to sort of be able to have that information on hand for whenever they have questions, and just sort of, again, getting more involved in the whole process.
Now, Chris, did you learn something from the conversation and answering the questions, maybe something about, for example, about Berkeley, California, that you may not have known before, and how California politics and the elections are run?
Yeah, well, we learned a lot about how each state has its own election laws and own regulations, and each community on top of that as well. So there are things that are a lot different about Berkeley in terms of election administration. One thing that's interesting about California versus Indiana is that they have jungle primaries that are nonpartisan. So basically, it's possible for a general election to have two Democrats or two Republicans at the top of the ticket, which is really different from Indiana in that we have a Democrat and a Republican in the general, no matter what. So there's all kinds of interesting things, and that's just at the tip of the iceberg, I'd say.
Now, Malik, being the host of the program, you got a chance to, no doubt, to help work with the producers to come up with some of the questions and the challenges. What were some of the most interesting challenges that you got to pose to both Chris Chiang and Rigel Robinson?
Yeah, so it's super fun getting to sort of figure out these challenges and making them really fun, right? Making them really energetic. If you watch the show, there's so much color and energy. And we're also, though, taking a shot at just being more realistic, too, right? In this time, I think people are figuring out that there's so much to talk about in so many issues. And I think in the show here, we sort of talked about police reform, how you can actually, like, track state-level action on police reform, because there are a lot of people now that are thinking about how the money can be shifted for defunding the police or for sort of shifting money in communities and giving it to more young people and sort of civil services and so social services rather. And so that's something we sort of focused on in the show too. And just I think that challenge is called I'm Just a Bill, and sort of figuring out how they can follow that money. And that's sort of a fun thing, is sort of seeing how far you can go down the rabbit holes of, you know, websites that are run by the government and official sort of sites, because everyone sort of, I think, even in this show, there were conversations about just how boring these sites can be and how bureaucratic these sites can be, and it can be really hard to figure everything out. And so it's really fun to sort of go down them and sort of watch the challenge unfold on the show.
Was that something, Chris, that you discovered, that they a lot of times are pretty boring, that they're not very exciting, that maybe they're not very visually entertaining?
Well, the websites for sure. As a member of the government now, I suppose that I completely agree with Malik. I mean, the websites can be really outdated, can be really hard to navigate, but behind the scenes, the API and the databases of those websites can be kind of rejiggered into a more user-friendly format. And we're seeing that more with some of the apps and some of that are related to Election Day. That we have in our county, some of the websites that are nationally recognized and that allow you to browse some of the bills that were proposed in other legislatures a lot more easily. And that's just part of all of the entire goal of making the political user experience more user-friendly for folks.
Now, Chris, I have to ask you, this was obviously your first encounter in being able to do a program like this. Probably not the first time you may have been on Zoom or some other related software to converse with family or friends or whatever it may be. But how was it to be able to get set up in a session like this for such an interesting and a different purpose, that is being involved in a game show?
It was really different for sure. Like, I actually had to move around and get a little bit closer to my Wi-Fi router so that I could get a better signal, and then I took my phone into airplane mode. So there's all kinds of things behind the scenes that the folks at WGBH did so much hard work to make sure that it could be a polished, finished product in the end. But then ultimately, I think people will understand that we're in such unprecedented times, and keeping up with as much of the technological capacity as we can using our iPads from home is something that they'll be understanding of.
Now, Malik, tell us a little bit about, from GBH's standpoint, what kind of work had to be done to help work with the producers to get this program, this episode of the program, I should say, set up.
We always sort of start with, you know, the producers researching on all of the different challenges and sort of figuring out how we can incorporate both the two contestants into them. And so we did that. We then have sort of calls about the show and the challenges, and I sometimes try to go in and do the challenges before the show because it can be very difficult when you're the host to not really know where they are. But the funny thing is that they are recording their screen, actually, during the whole thing, and we can also see them on camera. So that gets popped into the show, too, which is really cool. So then you can really see where they were in that moment and them finding it. There was sort of aha moments, as well as just, like, watching them navigate it when they're confused. It's pretty, adds a new layer to the show. And so, yeah, it was super fun. And then for this show, just sort of being there and ready to go. I feel like these two contestants were so already involved in politics. And so some of our contestants, you know, have different levels of involvement, but these two, you know, actually being in office was just sort of a different thing that we haven't had on the show. And so it was definitely very exciting to have them both.
Now, Chris, would you do something like this again if the opportunity came up?
Oh, in a heartbeat, Chris. I absolutely would. It's something that I think every other elected official should try to get creative about ways that they do outreach to their constituents. And that means going into kind of unusual places and not just doing the typical canvassing and doing the political ads and going out on social media, going out on Nextdoor, going to community events, doing formats like these and not being afraid of getting in front of the public and answering those questions and, you know, being not afraid to laugh at yourself as well, like when I was making mistakes in the competition against Rigel. So 100% I would.
Malik Mercier is the host of a program which is entitled Internet Expert. It's a 10-minute episode that you can see on YouTube, by the way. Put in Internet Expert. You'll find this particular channel for it. And take a look at the episode that was recorded with State Representative Chris Chung, who is from Dyer, and with a colleague from California, a Berkeley, California city councilman named Rigel Robinson. They're both involved in this Internet Expert game show. It's a very special social TV game show that is designed to engage Generation Z voters in the democratic process. And Malik and Chris, thank you for being with us to talk about it today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. This was awesome.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us today. Looking tomorrow, well, on the program, we have a conversation with the Gary Community Schools manager, Paige McNulty, to find out the latest about the school district. Also, we have a conversation with Home Instead Merivale owner, Sandy Haywood, about providing care for loved ones that have dementia, especially at a tough time, the coronavirus pandemic. And we hope you can join us for the program tomorrow.